Teaching during a pandemic. How are Maine's teachers faring? It's challenging enough to be a teacher anytime, but think about now. Learning new technology on the fly, making lesson plans for hybrid learning, not knowing whether the situation will change from week to week, finding ways to help students who are already struggling. All this while worrying about your own health and family. The list goes on. We know teachers are creative and resourceful, but is this just too much? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with some teachers about how they're doing, and we welcome your story. Tell us about a teacher in your life and their response to the pandemic. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The job of a teacher is never an easy one, but the COVID crisis has introduced so many added challenges to teaching remote learning: health and safety concerns, anxiety and disconnection from students. How are Maine teachers finding their way through this pandemic? My guest today, Rebecca Cole, who is a first grade teacher at Windham Primary School and the local union president for Sebago East Shore Education Association. She also represents Maine on the National Education Association Board of Directors. And Doug Hodum is a science teacher at Mount Blue High School, and he is the union president for Mount Blue Regional School District. We invite your questions and comments. We'd love to hear your experiences, whether you're a teacher or whether you have a student who you'd like to share their teacher's experience. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. A note, that is a different phone number from the one to call in for Maine Public's Community Impact Drive. For Maine Calling, call 1-800-399-3566. Doug and Becca, welcome to both of you. Doug, I'm going to start with you. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You did. You did a great job. Thank you.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. I wanted to ask if you could just start by giving us a picture of what school looks like in your district now, knowing that every district is different. How much in-person teaching are you doing? How much remote teaching are you doing?
So it's varied in my district depending upon the level. So as a high school teacher, we have split our students into two cohorts. We have an A to J cohort, and those students come Monday and Tuesday. And then we have a K to Z cohort that comes in Wednesday and Thursday. And then Friday, everybody is remote. But the expectation is that the students are coming in digitally if they're not here in person. So I have a Zoom class going on at the same time I have students in person. Our middle school has a different model. They see students either two or three times a week, depending upon how they've been split up. And I believe it's a similar schedule for the elementary. The difference is the elementary students are not Zooming in on a daily basis, as far as I know. And the middle school students, they do remotely come in for some classes, but not for all of them. So it's a very mixed bag.
So Doug, for you, how is it going? I know you're a science teacher. Does this mean you need to make sure you're in frame for every lab experiment, for every, I'm just imagining a science teacher turning around and trying to point something out on the periodic table and having to think about where they are on their Zoom camera.
Well, yeah, so it's caused me a fair bit of consternation because I don't have good replicas for students to see online. So my students who are here in person are having more hands-on experience, obviously, than the ones who are remote. And I know that some teachers in my building and across the state are trying to package up experiments for students to do at home and sending things home for them to do and then report back with mixed success and mixed engagement from students. So it is a significant challenge to make sure students are engaged and are able to still get at least something of a semblance of an experience given that some are here in person at least once a week and others are fully remote.
Rebecca, you have younger kids, which introduces, I imagine, all sorts of other challenges. What is particularly challenging about teaching the little ones during a pandemic?
Hi, and thank you, first of all, for having us on today, Jennifer. It means a lot to just have our concerns heard as well as some of our successes. I would say for my experience, and I think that of many of my colleagues at the elementary level, it has just been challenging for the kids and for us too. You know, the longer this goes on, there comes a point where, you know, little ones are, and I'm sure big ones too, are tired of, you know, having to keep a mask on. And when you work with six-year-olds and you're supposed to stay 6 feet apart from them, you know, they have loose teeth and loose shoelaces and they miss their moms and dads. And so some of those pieces, I think, are the most obviously challenging things. But I think that for the younger kids, what's most challenging is also supporting their families. Because on their, if we were teaching in a similar model to Doug's, where we have some kids who are 100% remote, we have others who are coming as part of a hybrid model in person 2 days a week. And then on Friday, I have all of my kids on a morning meeting for Zoom and trying to support their families to help them access any online instruction or any remote day instruction, whether it's, you know, technology based or not. They're a little less independent with that than perhaps their older counterparts are, and they have had enough of being having mom and dad be teacher as well as their parents. And I think that, you know, families are finding it increasingly challenging to balance their work life with that piece at home. So finding ways that we can support continued learning and moving forward and make sure our families, we respect that they are all in very different places, even as, you know, from the beginning of this experience to now, things continually shift for them as well. So,
sure, Rebecca, let me ask you about this, because I know first grade is one of those grades where the progress a kid makes, a student makes, is really measurable. You know by the end of first grade sort of what kind of measures you want them to meet. So it may be a little easier than it is for Doug to have a sense of how kids are doing this year compared to other years. And I'm wondering, do you think your first graders are doing as well as they need to be doing? Are they, for example, learning to read as quickly as they need to be learning?
Do you know, I have actually been really pleased with the academic progress of my kids this year. They are enthusiastic when they come to school. They're really excited to be there. And so that has made the engagement piece not as much of an issue as I was afraid it was going to be when I have them. And they are, you know, they're adapting to our model. There are only 9 of them in front of me at a time. So I'm actually able to spend more time one-on-one or in small groups with them than I would be if I had 18 or 20 of them in a given day. So I think that while I know that there's a lot of concern that kids are quote unquote behind or, you know, they're not going to be where they need to be, I have seen so much growth in them this year. And I think a lot of it is because of things like smaller class sizes and just their happiness to be there at school. And it's, you know, not day after day I have to go in and do my routine. And so I'm actually really pleased with their progress. And I'm
great.
I'm not as concerned as I think some other people may be.
And Doug, do you have a sense? Are your kids absorbing what they need to use a science word, absorbing what they need to be this year?
I think it's pretty varied. I think there are some students who, and I'm sure Rebecca sees this as well, there are some students who are thriving. You know, at the high school level, there's the significant social component, and there is social anxiety is very real for some students. And some of those students, when removed from that, are finding their voices and finding a new level of confidence that they didn't have when they were here. And those are students who are doing very well. There are some students who are curious and interested and like school and will engage in any way they can. So if when they're here, like Rebecca was saying, They're really excited to be here. They may not have loved school 12 months ago. Now they love coming to school because it is something that they are appreciating more. And then there are other students who are really struggling. And I think Rebecca did a great job of summarizing that. You know, we're not just working with students. We are definitely working with families and trying to support them and trying to encourage them to ask for help, whether it's technology because their Zoom meeting isn't working or their internet is unreliable, and providing the supports and answering questions. So it's broadened out what we're being asked to do. And for students, it's just a mixed bag. I think some are doing really well and have found a comfort zone, and others are disengaged, and it's difficult to see that, to have a population of students that we are trying so hard to continue to bring to school, whether virtually or in person, and who are struggling to do that for a lot of very valid reasons. But it continues to be what we try to do. And so I think it's all over the place. And I was remiss, Jennifer, I'd like to thank you as well.
That's okay.
So thank you for having us.
it's our pleasure. Thank you for the work that you do. Joining us now, Jesse Hargrove, who is a social studies teacher at Herman High School and the vice president of the Maine Education Association. Thanks so much for calling in, Jesse, and tell us how your teaching has had to change this year and what's most challenging about it.
Well, thank you for having us, and hello to all my colleagues who are also there. I think the real challenge is kind of what Doug was getting, is just not knowing what the needs are when students are not in school. There are some students who I realize if I haven't seen them in two classes, that's really a week that I haven't seen them, maybe even more. So that's been a challenge. Another thing, I have taken on an AP class this year, and when I looked at the calendar for when the AP test was, well, our schedule is semester-based, so that really left a minimal amount of time to prepare students for the AP test, and so it became a true hybrid model where students were logging in when they were at home and joining students who were in person, and we were doing both at the same time. I'm sure that that's pretty typical around the state, that we have students who are participating remotely via the technology. But then we also have people in class, and you're trying to balance both. And so you're really being pulled in two different directions, attending to students who are in the building and students who are at home at the same time.
And I'm going to ask you a question, Jesse, that at some point, maybe now, maybe a few minutes down the road, I want to ask all of you. And Jesse, the personal question, how are you holding up?
we're getting by. I think one, students have always sort of fueled us. It's especially in comparison to lockdown last year, where we went home and we just didn't know anything about what was going on with our students. Being back in school and seeing students in the classrooms and fueling off of the energy that they bring every day helps. It's hard being a parent in this situation. I understand that. I have two kids of my own, and it's hard wondering what they're doing during the day. When they're not in school, it's hard supporting them with their school stuff when I'm in school myself 5 days a week and they're home 3 days a week. So that's challenging, but I also know that their teachers are working as hard as they can to support them as well.
Yeah, and I will. Rebecca and Doug, we have just about a minute and a half. Why don't you, Rebecca, go first? How are you holding up?
I'll preface it by saying I'm so happy to have kids in front of me again. Last spring was really hard, but honestly, this is exhausting, and it's exhausting physically, it's exhausting emotionally, it's exhausting mentally. Planning for kids to be home, there are days that they're not, you know, in person, as well as the days that they're there. My two cohorts are very different, so it's not a case of planning on, you know, planning just 2 days worth of work every week. It's much different than that, and worrying about as Jesse said, what's happening when they're not at school, worrying about getting sick myself. My daughter teaches biology at a large high school in the state, worrying about, her well-being, being around so many students. And there's no way to get around that piece of it. And I think that I speak for a lot of us when I say the word is just exhausted.
And Doug, would you agree?
In a word, yes, it is. I have often said to people, every day feels like both Monday and Friday in the middle of June for a teacher. So it is just utterly overwhelming, juggling in-person students and remote students at the same time. Doesn't sound like it would be that hard when I say the words out loud, but then when I try it in practice, it is exhausting. It's everything Rebecca said.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we do have to go to a break. We hope you'll stay with us. We appreciate Jesse Hargrove from Herman High School joining the conversation for just a few minutes. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Thomas College, committed to you and your success with flexible graduate programs online or on campus. thomas.edu/GPS.
Good morning. This is Susan Tran, Interim Director of Content. I'm here with Senior Editor Keith Shortall. We're going to take just a moment to talk with you about the impact that we can have together on the community this morning. Maine Public Radio provides connections to Mainers and stories just like the ones that we're hearing today on Maine Calling from our teachers across the state. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call with your support of this important work.
Yeah,
morning,
Susan,
Keith.
Good morning. And you know, I'm listening to that last segment, not only because we're prepping for this, what we're going to say here, but because this is resonating with me. You have kids in school, I have kids in school, I'm working from my home. We all know the story. But this is such a valuable forum. You know, a lot of what's happening here in this hour of radio can't really be captured in a 4-minute news story or, right, you know, the short news briefs. It requires, it's a big conversation. It requires a big forum. So bringing these voices in, hearing the stories of teachers, just this, the whole image of, you know, little kids have loose teeth and loose shoelaces, but trying to be 6 feet apart from them. It really paints a great picture. And we're so proud to be able to provide this kind of forum for people to be heard, to talk about not only the challenges that they're facing, but also the successes and some of the great solutions that they're coming up with to get their job done. The number 1-800-866-1475.
And you can also go online to mainepublic.org. And, you know, if this today's edition of Maine Calling is resonating with you as it is with me and Keith, you know, you have the power to make a difference, to make an impact right now. Your impact will go twice as far today as for every donation made to Maine Public Radio to support great programming like Maine Calling. Maine Community Foundation will give 33 meals to Good Shepherd Food Bank. So your support at any level of Maine Public Radio will trigger Maine Community Foundation to give 33 meals to Good Shepherd Food Bank, which, you know, is helping to fight food insecurity in Maine, which is another thing that really affects our students throughout the state. Won't you call now? 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org.
You know, I saw this number, Good Shepherd Food Bank provided something like more than 27 million meals last year. That's a hard number to get your head around.
Yeah.
But it should tell you something about the need here in Maine, in particular, what we're going through now. So this really is a valuable way to make your generosity toward Maine Public then also pivot to an whole other realm and really do some great needed work for your community. 1-800-866-1475.
That's right. We're going to be going back to Maine Calling in just a moment. But do think about the impact that this service has on your life, on your community. You tune in, you participate in these important conversations that Maine Calling has every day of the week. 1-800-866-1475 is that number to call. And when you call with your support at any level, Maine Community Foundation will then give 33 meals to Good Shepherd Food Bank. 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org. And thank you.
Thank you.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. And today on the program, we are talking about Maine teachers and how the pandemic is affecting their ability to do their jobs. Joining me, Doug Hodum, science teacher with Mount Blue High School and union president for Mount Blue Regional School District. Rebecca Cole is here too. She's a first grade teacher at Windham Primary School and union president for Sebago East Shore Education Association. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling. Post a comment to our Facebook page or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Before we go to listener calls, I want to ask you each something that I've been thinking about a lot this school year. I know in spring and then as plans were made for fall, there are many teachers, not just here in Maine, but across the country, who are opposed to in-school education and really just because of health and safety concerns. And I'm wondering, now that we're this far into the pandemic, this far into the school year, if, Rebecca, you still know teachers who wish they weren't in the classroom at all, or if that really is something that is a past tense discussion.
I don't think I would characterize it so much as not wanting to be in the classroom. I think it's wishing that we didn't feel that risk as strongly as we do. And certainly the longer it has gone on, it seems that, you know, it feels like it's become more difficult for some of the members of our community to maintain that their stamina for the protocols that are required for us to stay open. We, you know, certainly saw spikes in numbers of positive cases after the holidays. We have, you know, for most of us, we have a break coming up in February. You know, we're hearing about, you know, families who are traveling, students who are having play dates and sleepovers and those kinds of things. And we just want to make sure that if we are in school, that we can be there safely. And I just have to take a moment and give some credit to not just our classroom teachers, but all of our adults who are part of our education community. We have bus drivers and custodians and food service workers and education technicians and you know, it's on everyone's mind all the time, you know, wanting to be there for kids, but also wanting to be able to stay safe while we do it.
Sure. Doug.
I would echo everything Rebecca said. I think it's, I think every educator wants to be in the building with students. I think there are teachers who are home because they need to be for their own health and safety reasons, but we want our students in the classroom and we want to be working with them. So I don't think it's a matter of not wanting to be here, like Rebecca said. I think it's we want to do it safely, and we are doing the best that we can. And so I don't think it's a thing of the past because, you know, as we've said, it's difficult to stay 6 feet away from students. It's hard to keep them 3 feet away from each other. You know, when even at high school level, you know, I want to be able to get close enough to them to look at their computer screens or to look at a microscope when they're looking at something. And the kids are great. They step back away from the, you know, about from their computer or from the microscope when we're looking at something so I can look in. But it's a matter of just we want to be safe because, you know, the numbers have spiked and that, you know, that makes us all nervous because people are traveling and people are, they're making decisions that have impacts on us and our ability to continue to stay in school. So while being in school and the hybrid model is very, very difficult and challenging, having kids in a room is the best thing. That's why most of us are teachers and work in education, is to be able to work with kids.
We'll go to Kiera, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kiera, go ahead.
Hello, I just wanted to, first of all, thank you so much for doing this segment. As a teacher, it's just so important and so wonderful to know that we're not alone right now and that everybody across the state is having a hard time. But I just wanted to bring into the conversation, too, that remote learning has really exacerbated any inequities that may have been underlying in our communities already and has furthered those issues or those problems. So whether it's with our BIPOC community having a hard time getting resources, or it is our students on free and reduced lunch who are having a hard time getting meals that they usually rely on with school, remote learning has really taken those inequities and those issues that we've already been seeing and made them even harder. And so our students who are already struggling due to other outstanding circumstances are now struggling even more because of different responsibilities that are put on them at home.
Sure. Kira, thank you so much for calling. And you used the acronym BIPOC, which stands for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. Doug, I'm wondering, in Mount Blue, with so many rural students, are you finding this? Are you finding inequities just in kids that maybe don't have a good internet connection at their home?
Absolutely. We have students who we know the areas where their connectivity is extremely poor, and that is something that we continue as an educational community here to try to figure out. There are some strategies that are being put in place. Some individual students are coming and asking to be on site more often, but it is definitely an issue. And I know that it's not just here, it's across the country. Exactly what was said by Kira, the caller, is that there are these inequities that we need to be addressing, and it's difficult to do that. It's difficult to try to, you know, narrow gaps that are there, that were there before the pandemic. So it is shining a bright light on in many cases, it's in my area, it's socioeconomic. It's also just the availability of technology. If you live in a rural area, there is no high-speed option, and we have hotspots that we've given to students, but again, that relies on there being a cell signal. And there are communities in this state, in this country, in my district, that do not have a reliable cell signal. So the hotspots are not helping those students. So it's forcing us to be creative and do the best that we can to try to draw those students in and support them as best we can.
Kira, thanks so much for calling in. We'll go to Adam, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Adam. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I'm an English professor at Hudson University, and I'm really enjoying this conversation. The question I have for the panel is, you know, how do you think these issues will affect students from Maine wanting to make that transition into higher education after high school? How do you think it will impact their aspirations and their ability to go on and pursue a major of their choosing?
I'll turn this question back to you, Doug, since you're a high school teacher.
So I think one of the, I don't want to say highlights because, but I think one of the potential successes is it, for students who want to pursue a higher education, this is in some ways preparing them to be more independent. I don't keep them in class all the time on Zoom, and there is an expectation that students are doing work outside of school. And so I think in some ways it is allowing them to test the waters a little and see how they do as independent learners, because there is a dramatic change from when you go from high school, when you're in school every day, to college where you, or a higher level of education where you may only meet in a class once or twice a week. So I think that component of it is going to benefit students, especially students who, when they get to college, may have struggles and need some supports. The supports are still present in the high school. I think it's for others, it's posing a challenge because they're not getting the full experience of some of the courses they might be taking at the high school level. And they may not be moving through the material as quickly. They may not be exposed to as much of the content. I don't say that's just the reality of where we are. We're moving through material as we can. So I don't know long-term what those effects will be. I think students who are interested in pursuing higher education, I think they still will. And some of them will be more successful because of this than they may have been otherwise. And others, again, may struggle because they're not used to that. So I don't have a great answer, but I think it's very dependent upon the students. Everyone is right. Individual. And so I think that there will still be students who want to go on. I think there are some who, if they think they have to be online, are going to probably back away from that for a little while, because this has been hard. It's very different when you sign up for a class online than when you sign up to go to high school every day and are only coming to school twice a week.
Adam, thank you so much for your call. Calling in now, Laura Whitney, who is a middle and high school choral music teacher in the Gray New Gloucester School District. Thanks so much for calling in, Laura.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you.
As we all know, the arts have taken a really hard hit during the pandemic, and there are unique challenges to trying to teach music during these times. Famously, a lot of people have talked about how we really ought not get together and sing. Can you explain some of the difficulties that you're facing and how you're confronting them?
Yes, and actually, three come to mind, but the biggest one for me is the one that you just mentioned. I think that bands and choruses are just inherently social by nature. And kids are craving that connection and sense of community that you get from a real live ensemble. So rehearsing in isolation, as many of us are, has created considerable and really understandable frustration in the kids, where they're thinking, like, oh my gosh, this isn't what I signed up for. What am I doing here this year? And scheduling has also been a really big challenge for us. There are just so many varying ways that programs are functioning across the state right now. Some music programs are seeing kids in person. Some are fully remote. Some music programs have actually completely shut down for the year. So in order to keep kids distanced, I think many districts are having kids attending school in cohorts to keep those class sizes really small, which really means less instructional time overall. And I think our last caller was spending some time talking about that as well. And for my school, this has meant students take electives and unified art classes remotely while all core classes are in person. So for my particular classes, my access to students is only on remote days. So one of my greatest challenges is really finding a time that we can actually sing in person together, which ends up being after school or any other time that we can get that can kind of fill that void for those kids. And the last,
I imagine some kids feel self-conscious too. I'm thinking about my own experience with chorus in high school, and I was comforted by my friend Laurel, who was really loud and really good right next to me.
Oh my goodness, yes. Yes. Because the kids are rehearsing in isolation, and that social component is just gone in a lot of ways. I'll let kids chat a lot at the end of the class or at the beginning of the class just to kind of fill that void, because it's not something I would have done under normal circumstances pre-COVID, but now I just see them with that need, and I'm eager to do anything I can to keep them in the program.
And do you have concerns for lasting effects of the pandemic on music education?
I think it's going to take a long time for us to rebuild our programs. Usually when you're looking at building a program, you're thinking of roughly a four-year time span of, you know, between, building up a set of skills so that you have either, you know, your seniors in high school that can be leaders and be models for the younger kids, or your eighth graders in the middle school that are leaders for those younger kids. And right now my principal said it last week, next year we're going to have only one class in our high school that remembers a normal year of school. So it's going to be like we have three freshman classes all at once that have to learn all these skills again. And there's not the same, a bunch of leaders at the top that know how to teach the younger kids. So that's the biggest concern I have for lasting effects is, you know, how are we going to teach that again? I think the answer is less how, actually, or the concern is less how, and it's more how long will it take, which is probably going to be longer than usual.
Well, Laura, I so appreciate you joining the conversation today. That's Laura Whitney. She teaches middle and high school chorus in the Gray New Gloucester School District. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Husson University, committed to leading the way through graduate study in business, counseling, and nursing to strengthen Maine's future. Husson.edu, and by New England Naturopathic Health, focused on individually oriented and minimally invasive health care. NaturopathicME.com.
Taking just a few minutes out of this really interesting conversation about the plight of teachers, also the plight of parents and students at the same time. Just a few minutes from this conversation about as part of our Pledge from Home Community Impact Drive. I'm Keith Shortall, senior editor here at Maine Public. Delighted to be here with my colleague, interim director of content, Susan Tran. And
hi, Keith.
Susan, this is like an interesting time in the history of this program, because it started actually about 10 years ago. It'll be 10 years old this November. We started in November of 2011. with just two programs a week. That's what we could muster. And I was the host, and Jonathan Smith, who's still our producer, was there. But two days is what we did. Obviously, we've grown to five. It's the show that it's become. It's this forum for hearing voices, but it was only made possible, that growth was only made possible from folks like you who are listening right now. Help us grow it further. 1-800-866-1475.
1-800-866-1475. That is the number to call to support your favorite programs like Maine Calling, to support the in-depth conversations that we are able to have across Maine through this wonderful medium of public radio. 1-800-866-1475. That is the number to call. And when you call today with your support, your impact goes twice as far. We have a special relationship with Maine Community Foundation, and for every donation we receive, regardless of how large or small that donation is, Maine Community Foundation will give 33 meals to Good Shepherd Food Bank. So you are supporting public radio, but you are also helping to fight food insecurity here in Maine. And we've tried to make it as easy as possible. It's just one call, 1-800-866-1475. That is the number.
Yeah, and maybe you're new to Maine. I know that the folks have been moving in recent weeks, recent months. Maybe you had a program similar to Maine Calling or a station, a public station that you were part of where you came from. Now is a great time for the reasons that Susan just mentioned to become part of our community, the public radio community here, and in support of this program as well. The number again, 1-800-866-1475, or if you're not a phone person, you can go to mainepublic.org and donate and trigger that donation on behalf of Maine Public.
That's right. And speaking of community, we have a learning opportunity for you next Wednesday at 12:30. Maine Public is hosting a virtual, so an online estate planning seminar. It's going to feature presentations by two of Maine's top experts on wealth management and charitable gift planning. If you want to register or learn more about it, you can visit mainepublic.org and just click on the estate planning button on the right hand side. It should be a great opportunity. If you have any questions about estate planning, it's a great chance to come and ask experts questions. But getting back to the message of the hour, 1-800-866-1475 is the number we need you to call right now.
Yeah, get on the team, get on the bus, whatever you want to call it, to join the community. 70% of our support comes from the community. We remind folks of this, but maybe they don't realize this. The vast majority, 70%, coming from donations from people just like you who value this service, particularly now, as their source of news and information. 1-800-866-1475.
You can also go online at mainepublic.org. We will be going back to Maine Calling to continue this great conversation. But in the meantime, we will still be here to take your call, 1-800-866-1475. Thank you.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how teachers are coping and finding ways to keep students learning in spite of the many obstacles they face. My guests are Rebecca Cole, who is a first grade teacher at Windham Primary School, and Doug Hodum, a science teacher with Mount Blue High School. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Going to go to a Facebook post here from Marie. She asks, wondering how retired educators may assist teachers or students during this time. Is there a way to connect, offer help, etc.? Becca?
Actually, I'm really glad that that was brought up. We have a program through the MEA retired contingent called Frontline Warm Line, and we have retired educators who are trained in exactly that, being able to provide support for people who are, again, as we've said, we're so happy to be doing what we love to do, but it is just so exhausting and consuming on so many fronts, and having someone who has been there, who understands not only the profession from nuts and bolts kind of approach to understanding the emotional and personal investment in the job and being able to help us navigate this time is invaluable. So Frontline Warmline through MEA Retired has been created just for that purpose.
I want to circle back to the conversation and toward the beginning of the program when I asked you all how you were doing and you used the word exhausted. Doug, what are you doing to take care of yourself, to keep yourself going?
I am a runner, so I run a fair bit. And I am fortunate enough to have two dogs at home who make me smile every day, and a wife who supports me. She's also a teacher. And so we have sessions in the evening where we turn off other devices and we just spend some time together. We watch a show. And so those are the things that help me on a daily basis. But I try to run and stay active that way, because that's my time. It's when I shut off. I don't have any electronics with me. I just go out and exercise a bit, and then walking my dogs with my wife. Those are the highlights of my days from a personal perspective.
And Becca, what about you? How are you taking care of yourself?
Some of the things that I have found helpful for myself are just being super organized, trying to front load as much as I can as far as planning and preparation, so that I can turn on a dime if I need to without it being completely overwhelming and shocking. So I don't have young children at home, so I have the ability to go to school early, stay at school late, and then when it comes to be the weekend or a vacation, I can really just unplug as much as possible and enjoy being with my family and those kinds of things. I'm also an equity trainer for the NEA's Leaders for Just Schools program. And so all of the things that were said earlier about, it might seem like, well, we gave everybody a device, everybody has a hotspot, you know, everybody has access, and that's just not true. There are so many other aspects to that. So keeping connected to that work through virtual webinars and things like that has been actually really helpful for me to give me something else to focus on. So
go to a couple comments coming in. A tweet from the Maine Outdoor School. A couple teachers from Mountain View School in Sullivan have beginning their teacher getting their students outside for science weekly this year, thanks to a collaborative program offered between Frenchman Bay Conservancy and Maine Outdoor School. And an email from Barbara. I just wanted to give a shout out to Brooksville Elementary School teachers and staff who have done an amazing job keeping our school open. They have been very on top of keeping our students and themselves safe during this difficult time. They've been super flexible for parents who are concerned about their kids and decide to go to remote for a couple days or even a couple weeks due to spikes of COVID in our area. I can't imagine how they're doing it, but truly appreciate their dedication to our students and our community. We'll go to Barry, who's calling from Barry Stoneham, where are you calling from?
Stoneham, Maine.
Where's Stoneham, Maine?
Stoneham is near Norway, about 20 miles from Norway,
okay.
Norway, Maine.
Great. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I wanted to echo everybody and just say how much we appreciate what teachers are doing in this extraordinary time. I have a unique perspective because I'm an author and PD, have done PD work all around the country with teachers, and I have many teacher friends. And I just wanted to say that the pandemic, just as it's exposed the inequalities in society, it's also exposed the irony of what's going on with the over-testing of children. I keep hearing over and over again that children are falling behind. Whenever I hear that, I just cringe, because I think it promotes this idea that school is a race and that somehow the teachers are out of step or that we're all falling behind. And it just adds more anxiety. I'd just like to throw out the idea that maybe school education is more of a journey and less of a race, and just have the guests kind of reflect on that and what they've seen in their community
sure.
in those two views. And I just thought I'd throw that out there, because I think it's something that doesn't always get talked about in the news.
Yeah, sure. Barry, I think that's a really important point and a great one for a long conversation. We just have a few minutes, though. So, Doug, I'm going to ask you to maybe give some brief thoughts on Barry's comment.
I think he's right about it being a journey, and it isn't a race. Everybody, and we say this to parents all the time, I suspect Rebecca does with the little ones and I do with high schoolers, students develop at their own rate and there is no norm. Everybody has their own path, and you see it. Some students go to college right away. Some students go to job right away. Some students go into the service right away. Some students are not really sure what to do, and yet they all find their way, and that's how education is, that it is a developmental path, and this is just a new challenge that we're trying to figure out to support them in that path.
Becca.
Yeah, I agree, Doug, and I like what you said earlier in response to one of the other people who called in about content. And I think that a lot of times we equate learning with content. And while students may not be moving through curricular content as much as they did, I think that the quality of learning is what matters. And kids learning how to learn, I think, will in the end stand them in good stead.
Barry, thanks for calling in. An email here from Jean. How are administrators and school boards providing support to classroom teachers and other school workers and their families? Becca.
I'm hearing from people around the state that there are some districts where there are days provided where teachers can be self-directed in how they spend their day. They can use it for planning and prep. They can meet with their members of their professional learning community in order to do that efficiently and effectively together and kind of help one another with ease the workload. Doug may hear other things. We're in two very different parts of the state, so...
Yeah, go
I'll
ahead,
let him,
Doug.
Take a moment.
No, I think that's right. I think time listening, I think that's a big thing that's important that administrators and school boards are doing is listening to the staff and trying to find the balance between, you know, having students present in the buildings all the time or as much as possible versus recognizing, you know, what Becca and I have both said, and that is the staff is exhausted. It doesn't matter what your role is. It doesn't matter if you're an educational technician, a custodian, a superintendent, a classroom teacher. It doesn't matter the role. We're all exhausted and we all need time. And so time to navigate this, because we also have the same background stress that everybody has, that the families have who are trying to support their students in their learning and their education. And so I think listening and having open conversations and collaborative decision-making, that's the path forward through this. And that's the way that districts are finding success is working together and recognizing that it's not one teacher's challenge, it's everybody's challenge. It's every family's challenge and every educator's challenge to address and move through.
Rebecca, I'll let you wrap up and tell us, if I'm a parent and I'm listening to this program, what can I do to support my teacher, my kid's teacher?
I think just what Doug was just saying, just, you know, communication, listening to each other. One of the challenges has been there are some parents who want, you know, more things provided for their kids. One, you know, in the same, you know, almost the same moment, we have parents who are saying there's too much, I can't deal with it. And so just understanding that we are trying to support everybody and everyone's in a unique situation. And so please just keep that communication open and just know that we appreciate on their end the things that they are having to do too, as well as balance those non-school related realities for their families right now.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us. Rebecca Cole, a first grade teacher at Windham Primary School and union president for Sebago East Shore Education Association, and Doug Hodum, a science teacher with Mount Blue High School and union president for Mount Blue Regional School District. Today's sound engineer was John Keimel. George Thomas is helping out as well. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we are talking about language, the words and terminology that reflect these times we're in, how language is changing. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.